are Locked On 49ers, your daily San Francisco 49ers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome to Locked On 49ers, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. Brian Peacock here with you on this Film Friday episode of the program. My guest today is Ted Wynn. He is the All-22 film breakdown expert for The Athletic, covers the Raiders and 49ers locally, covers all the teams nationally for The Athletic. And if you do want to subscribe to The Athletic, don't forget we've got you covered 40% off. TheAthletic.com/LockedOn49ers. Just shoot over there and get yourself 40% off your first year subscription. Ted Wynn, smart football guy, always fun to talk to, so I'll have him coming up shortly. I want to talk a little bit about the injury report before we get to Ted, and also the Pro Football Focus stat of the day, some interesting numbers from last week in Minnesota. Don't forget to subscribe, rate, review the show. We are on iTunes. We are on Spotify. We are everywhere that you could find podcasts. You can find me on Twitter at BD Peacock. You can also email the show, LockedOn49ers@gmail.com. One other bit of news for the 49ers, and I guess we'll start with that, is Terrence Garvin, the newest member of the 49ers. The 49ers brought in all kinds of players and had some workouts, and they ended up settling on linebacker Terrence Garvin, who had formerly played for the Seattle Seahawks, and I think that's the key here with Garvin. I don't really know much about his game and haven't really watched him play too much. From what I can gather, he's someone that's versatile, can play maybe all three linebacker positions for the 49ers, and he is well-versed in the scheme, which I think is the number one key why Terrence Garvin was the guy the 49ers brought in, just because they're so thin at linebacker right now, and we'll talk about that injury report in a second. Terrence Garvin can play all three linebacker positions, knows the scheme from his days in Seattle that Robert Saleh runs here in San Francisco, so I think that is the reason Terrence Garvin was the newest member of the 49ers, and we'll see if he's active and see if he's ready to play on Sunday to potentially back up Fred Warner. And it looks like possibly Elijah Lee will have to start at will linebacker if Malcolm Smith still can't go. And on to that injury report, and Malcolm Smith in particular still has not suited up as a member of the San Francisco 49ers and still not practicing as of Wednesday, at least, did not participate in practice at all yet with that hamstring injury, and he's looking, I think he's still listed as questionable, but starting to look more doubtful that Malcolm Smith is going to play on Sunday, and Brock Coyle going on IR with his concussion and head injury, so that means Elijah Lee's probably going to start at will next to Fred Warner, and I had talked on the Rapid React podcast about how maybe Elijah Lee is the one who's a better fit just because he's got a little bit more range. He did grade out pretty well in his few snaps that he got at the end of the game after the Coyle injury in Minnesota, so a little more range, a little better ability to cover the flats. I think that's one of the matchups that the Detroit Lions are going to try use against the 49ers, is especially on those third downs and sneaking Theo Riddick, who's a really good receiving running back, out into the flats. And the flats area is kind of what killed the 49ers on Sunday. Also not participating in practice, a couple of new ones, Adrian Colbert and, well, Jaquaski Tartt was limited, but both starting safeties showed up on the injury report this week, and the injury report did grow even though there wasn't a number of really long-term injuries aside from the Brock Coyle going on IR, and none of the other starters were affected as far as long-term injuries go, it looks like. Joe Staley got a veteran day off, so that's, you know, he can just not practice all week for all I care. But Jaquaski Tartt showed up with a shoulder injury, limited participant, looks like he's, you know, on schedule to play. Another limited participant in the secondary was Kaywan Williams with a rib injury, and Akella Witherspoon, an ankle injury, also limited. I think those guys are going to be all ready to go. The one that surprised me a little bit was Adrian Colbert, who didn't practice because of a hamstring injury, and he played the whole game, as did the rest of those guys in the secondary that showed up on the injury report. But a hamstring injury, I think they just being cautious with him in the middle of the week, holding him out. We'll see how these things change on Friday as far as the practices go and the injury reports. But it sounds like they're holding guys like Colbert and Tartt and Akella Witherspoon out just to make sure those injuries don't get worse coming into this Sunday. Joshua Garnett is the one that sounds like he's further behind than Mike Person. Both guards left the game on Sunday with foot injuries. Mike Person did not participate but was working on the side. And from all reports in the locker room, Joshua Garnett was limping a lot more than Mike Person was moving around, who also did not participate in practice. Joshua Garnett with that dislocated toe injury, that's an injury that sounds like it's a little bit more serious and might be the guy who doesn't play. And if he does not suit up, Mike McGlinchey got his first action in his career at right guard, which was a surprising probably to everybody, including Mike McGlinchey. And I don't think they want to shove him over to guard in this contest. So even if Person does suit up and Joshua Garnett does not, then I got to imagine Matt Tobin is going to see his first action and be active for the 49ers. And he's a guy that can play a number of positions on the offensive line. So his versatility will help him to probably be active and suited up for the 49ers if one of those two other guards cannot go. And even if they can go, I think the 49ers have to be prepared that they're not going to be 100%. So I'd be surprised if both Garnett and Mike Person do suit up on Sunday. My guess, Person plays, Joshua Garnett does not. Marquise Goodwin, that's the last name. Well, I got to talk about Eric Magnuson, who's also on the injury report. He has a more major hamstring injury. He was limited in practice, though, so it's a good sign that he was at least getting out there and doing something on the side. I would still be surprised if Magnuson's ready to go, but good news for Eric Magnuson that that hamstring injury that they thought might put him on IR to start the year is actually good enough to where he's not on injured reserve, and he might make his way back much before midseason, but I don't think he's going to be quite ready yet. And then Marquise Goodwin, quadricep injury, the deep thigh bruise, did not participate in practice on Wednesday. Again, we'll see if he gets limited and gets moving around on Friday. If not, Dante Pettis is probably going to get his first NFL start at wide receiver. So that's the injury report, and hopefully we'll have better news when Friday's practices get done and some of those guys that were limited or not practicing are on the practice field and ready to go against the Lions for the home opener on Sunday. Real quick, stat of the day from Pro Football Focus before we bring Ted on the program. Dalvin Cook, he had 40 rushing yards against the 49ers in week one, but he had 45 rushing yards after contact. Yeah, let me see that again. 40 rushing yards, 45 yards after contact. So that means he had more yards after contact than he had total yards, which means he was getting hit in the backfield quite a bit. And that number is, let's see, Cook was hit in the backfield on 12 of his 16 rushing attempts in week one. Nobody was hit in the backfield at a higher rate in the NFL in week one. So basically, Dalvin Cook was just getting hit all the time. And the 49ers defensive line against the run was dominating the Vikings offensive line. So I think that statistic just really tells the story about how the 49ers defensive line was doing their job against the run and hitting Dalvin Cook, but the 49ers on the second level weren't able to finish the job, really aside from Fred Warner, who was all over the place with 12 tackles, making a ton of plays at the line of scrimmage. But Brock Coyle had a rough game, chasing people down sideline to sideline. Jaquaski Tart missed some tackles early, but Jaquaski Tart was flying around and playing much better in the second half. So telling stat that Dalvin Cook was able to have a pretty good game still being hit in the backfield on 12 of his 16 rushing attempts. I mean, Reuben Foster is going to go a long way in improving that, but I think the 49ers can clean up that in week two as well, even before Reuben Foster shows up. Taking a quick look at that MyBookie line, still at 6 points now. 49ers are favored over the Detroit Lions in week two. And I still like the 49ers to cover, not as much as I liked it when the line was 3.5 to start the week, but you want to go to MyBookie and put some money on any NFL game. I don't always know who's going to win, but if you do, you should go to MyBookie, who is slammed right now with new bettors and wants to give everyone the best service possible. So if you're willing to deposit after 7 p.m. Eastern time, they'll give you an additional $25 free play on deposits over $100. You just have to use promo code LOCKEDON25 to activate that offer. That's a new promo code if you've been listening to the program, LOCKEDON25, to get that additional $25 free play on deposits over $100. And they still have all the live in-game betting, over-unders on fantasy points scored, and the most rewarding player perks in the business. Visit MyBookie online today. That's MyBookie. And don't forget to use the promo code LOCKEDON25 when creating your account to claim up to $1,000 in free play. At MyBookie, you play, you win, you get paid. My guest today is Mr. Ted Wynn. He is now an NFL staff writer at The Athletic, a fantastic hire from those folks at The Athletic. And I've got a special offer for you, I'll tell you about in just a moment, for The Athletic, if you would like to subscribe. And I love, as his Twitter bio says, purveyor of truth of the All-22, the All-22 being the football film variety. He is our film expert on this Film Friday. Ted, thanks for joining the show once again.
Thank you for the kind words, and thanks for having me on.
Yeah, so of course we're going to talk Niners. We're going to get into the film there of the Niners and the missed opportunities against the Vikings in Week 1. But you wrote an article for The Athletic about rookie quarterbacks and broke down some stuff going on there. And I know, obviously, you don't want to overreact, as with the 49ers game or with any player or team. But after Week 1 with the rookie quarterbacks, it sounds like you kind of have a little bit of a favorite already amongst those rookie quarterbacks in this stacked class.
Yeah, I mean, Sam Darnold was my number one quarterback coming out of college. And he, you know, obviously played pretty well on Monday night in front of everybody. His pocket movements were just unreal for a guy that young. But the thing that, you know, I wrote about and that really makes Darnold special is just how quickly he processes the game and how quickly he's able to react. And his, you know, you combine that with his quick release and the velocity he throws the ball. Everything happens at an accelerated pace, and it's just uncommon for a rookie to be able to play that fast. He's going to throw some interceptions because he's going to rush things, but there's just a lot of good traits that that we've seen from Darnold so far.
Yeah, he's got that confidence, and I think a little bit of confidence we saw from Jimmy Garoppolo, too, where he's not afraid to try to stick a ball in there, and that might lead to some interceptions. And his first throw was a pick six for Sam Darnold, but he came back pretty strong in that game. And I think one of the things that's key for me with Sam Darnold that I've noticed, and it's true for him as soon as he stepped on the field at USC, is that it's never been too big for him. And he was the youngest starting quarterback in, I don't know what it was, since 1982 or something like that for the Jets in Week 1. And it was never too big for him. He jumped on the field and he was able to be a leader of young men at the college level. And he's seemed like he's been able to do the same transitioning in as a young quarterback on that young up-and-coming Jets football team. And it seems like the Jets with that young defense might be even a little bit ahead of schedule now.
Oh, yeah, for sure. I mean, I think they surprised some people last year with how well they played. They went on a little bit of a win streak, and you know, now they have Sam Darnold in there, and he looked pretty good in Week 1, and if he could continue playing well, you know, maybe the Jets could surprise some people in the AFC.
Any notes on the other rookie quarterbacks that are standing out to you?
I didn't get to take much of a look at how Josh Allen played in Week 1, but that It doesn't surprise me that he's taken over the starting job over Peterman, who isn't very good, and just that Bills offensive line is just really bad. And in preseason, Josh Allen showed the ability to, you know, get out of pressure and break the pocket and make some plays outside of it. So it makes sense that they would start him, especially because of, you know, Peterman just hasn't shown anything in the NFL, and the fact that they need somebody to make some plays when the offensive line breaks down, because it's going to happen pretty often.
And one more quick note I want to ask you about before we get deep into the 49ers here, and you're a Raiders guy above all else. Are Raiders fans like about to jump off a bridge right now after the Khalil Mack thing and then the Week 1 collapse in the second half against the Rams? What's the vibe over there in Oakland?
It's rough. I mean, there are some diehard fans that are just going to defend everything the organization does with a lot of fervor, you know, and not much objectivity. And, you know, that's part of being a Raiders fan. It's just, you know, you have that diehard attitude about you. And there's another group that, yeah, you know, they're ready to jump off the ledge. Khalil Mack trade is obviously one of the biggest trades that I can remember in a long time. And, it's, you know, it seems like the Raiders got the negative part of that deal so far. And, yeah, the Rams game was bad. I think it looked a lot worse than it was because of the fourth quarter collapse and the interceptions in the end. But, you know, you got to remember that Gruden's installing a pretty complicated system. The Raiders hung with the Rams, who might be, at least they might be the best team in the NFL, but if not, they have the most talented roster in the NFL, I think, for most of the game. So that's encouraging. I think it's going to take a few weeks for Carr to really get this off. You know, he won't master it that quickly, but I think it'll take a few weeks for him to really kind of get a little more comfortable and start getting more comfortable running this offense. It's very high volume.
I guess we got to get on to the 49ers then here. This is the Locked On 49ers podcast after all. So I guess it all starts with Jimmy Garoppolo. It was a rough week one for the offense in Minnesota, and I think a lot of people expected that the 49ers weren't going to necessarily go to the Vikings and play that defense and come out with the W necessarily in week one, but the offense really looked out of sync. I had a hit on KNBR last night, and I talked about how it seemed like it was like one of those fifth preseason games for the offensive side of the ball. The defense, though, showed up, which is a good sign for the 49ers. But specifically with Jimmy Garoppolo, the 3 picks to 1 interception ratio and the below 50% passing, just out of sync, timing with his receivers. What did you see there after looking through the all 22?
Yeah, I mean, you said it, they were just out of sync. There were plays where the quarterback thought a receiver was going to be in one area and he wasn't there, mainly with Dante Pettis. Part of Dante Pettis' game is being able to be more creative in his releases and his route running. But the drawback of that is that sometimes the quarterback might not know where he's going and can't anticipate as well. And we saw a few examples of disconnect with Garoppolo and Pettis there. That one drop that Garcon had in the end zone, a lot of people blame Pierre Garcon for dropping that ball. But that ball came out late. Garoppolo should have thrown that sooner. That was an issue that Shanahan talked about in the preseason when everybody thought that Garoppolo played, including me, thought he played extremely well against Texans in week two. Shanahan was critical of his performance, saying that he needed to be more in rhythm with a few throws. And, you know, he talked particularly about a 4th-and-1 throw there where Garoppolo didn't throw to an open receiver on time and had to make some spectacular play to get it. So this is an issue with Garoppolo going back to last season. And last season he had an excuse of him learning a playbook on the fly, which is a very valid reason why he wasn't quite in rhythm. But you want to see him be more in rhythm, have better chemistry, play in structure a little bit better in year two in this offense for sure. And we didn't see that against the Vikings. And the Vikings can make a tough play in rhythm. But I think Shanahan and the Niners want to see him play more in structure, play more in rhythm moving forward.
And I noticed a few times, and this is kind of dating back to last year as well, and he's got this unbelievable release and the ability to snap the ball off in an instant. And sometimes he's okay with not having his feet underneath him when he releases. And I wonder if that is sort of part of, along with the timing, it has something to do with some of the missed throws, and he can kind of tend to fade away if he's got pressure in his face and he can wait till the last second. But, you know, he's fading away with his bottom half and then snaps off the throws with his quick release, and I just think those things all together are part of it as well. Do you see some of those things with him and his lower half and his top half not really being in sync?
Yeah, but that's part of what makes him a special thrower, and Kyle Shanahan even highlighted his ability to be able to throw with his hips more than his feet, mm-hmm. and that helps him throw when there's pressure in his face and there's not much space they can step up in. So I think it's part of his natural throwing motion that makes it look like he throws off his back foot at times. But when I say throwing more in rhythm, he needs to be able to hit his back foot and throw to his first read without a hitch. And if that's not open, hitch to a second read, throw there, and have his feet time up with the progression of the play mm-hmm. a little bit more. And I think maybe having that quick release and that ability to just get rid of the ball whenever he wants allowed him to play out of rhythm a little bit in the past, but that's something that he has to get better at moving forward.
You mentioned Pettis and that one slant route that ended up getting picked off by Xavier Rhodes. Was that one of those examples of maybe, and I saw a slow motion breakdown of that route because, and like you mentioned, he's unique, Dante Pettis is, with his ability to create separation, but kind of takes an extra step with the way he moves and bends in and out of his routes, and then the ball maybe out earlier where Garoppolo thought he was going to be a step further into his slant route, and you think maybe that led to that interception in particular?
Yeah, so that example was an example of Garoppolo hitting his back foot and throwing the ball on rhythm, thinking that a receiver is going to be in one area, and he wasn't. And I he didn't talk about this. I believe this is the case because there was no pressure on Garoppolo's face. He had a clean pocket, and he missed a throw. And you never see Garoppolo miss a throw. I think he's one of the most accurate quarterbacks in the NFL. And when you watch the route by Pettis, he did put a little extra move on Xavier Rhodes. But the thing is, he got open. So yeah. On one hand, you know, you don't want to take that ability away from Pettis. He got open against at a very elite corner, Xavier Rhodes. But on the other hand, Garoppolo has to know where he's going to be, and they have to have a better feel for each other. And I think that will just come with time.
Ted Wynn, my guest on Locked On 49ers, and as I mentioned earlier, have a special offer for my listeners. 40% off your first year subscription to The Athletic. Just go to theathletic.com/lockedon49ers. You get all the local guys. You get national writers. You get Ted, of course, and of course the great David Lombardi and Matt Barrows writing about the 49ers daily at The Athletic. Go to theathletic.com/lockedon49ers. We talked about Garoppolo, and I want to get a little bit more into some of his weapons. Dante Pettis, obviously, you know, any rookie takes a little while to develop, so we'll see that chemistry hopefully grow between Garoppolo and Dante Pettis. But one of the guys I want to highlight, and the one who I think in 2018 will be the matchup problem that the 49ers will try to use against opposing defenses, and that's tight end George Kittle. And he already had a pretty good day, 5 catches for 90 yards in week 1. There was the missed throw from Garoppolo that was high in the end zone to George Kittle that could have been 6, and then there was, of course, the bad George Kittle drop on the long play that could have been either just, you know, a long gain or even a long touchdown reception. So what did you see from George Kittle, and do you think that that is the guy, like I do, that Kyle Shanahan's going to hang his hat on and dial up plays for Jimmy Garoppolo to create mismatches this year?
Yeah, I mean, I was a big George Kittle fan when he was in Iowa, and he kind of blew up the combine, and he got drafted by the Niners. And he put up pretty decent numbers for a rookie tight end. Rookie tight ends usually put up good numbers, so some people might think that he had a slow start, but I thought that was a pretty good start from him last year. And against the Vikings, I was surprised at how good he looked against the Vikings. I thought he was going to have a good second year, but just the way nobody in the Vikings could match up on him was pretty surprising and bodes well for the Niners. I mean, they tried putting Trey Waynes on him, a corner. They tried rotating different, you know, safeties or linebackers on him, and nobody could cover him. He's just abnormally explosive in and out of his breaks for a guy with that size. So, I mean, this might be a little hyperbolic, but he looks like a baby Gronk. Not quite as good as Gronkowski, but just seeing a guy that goes in and out of his breaks like that with that size would kind of remind me of Gronkowski. I don't think he'll be as good as Gronkowski, but I think they might have a similar game.
Yeah, he's not quite the freak of Gronkowski, but I see where you're going with that. And I don't have any problem with you getting hyperbolic here on Locked On 49ers. I think the fans get excited hearing that kind of stuff. And it's funny because the Vikings, of all the teams in the NFL, might be one of the better teams that should be able to match up against tight ends with the safeties and the talent they have at linebacker. So that really bodes well for the 49ers. You know, they hit a couple of those plays, and it would have been a Gronk-like line. It could have been 7 catches for 150 yards. And a couple touchdowns.
Yeah, I mean, it could have been 3 touchdowns. Like you said, that long wheel pass he could have caught, and there was a safety there that looked like he was in bad position. That might have been an 80-yard touchdown. He had a slot fade where he got wide open, and Garoppolo overthrew him too. That was another 40 yards. And then that overthrow in the end zone, obviously, that's 3 touchdowns right there. So he could have potentially had a monster game in week 1. So if you know, he's getting open like that against guys throughout the season, he might have a 1,000-yard season.
Did you watch any of the preseason stuff? One of my favorite guys I've been talking up since before the draft is rookie wide receiver Richie James, and I hope he gets active here. He wasn't active for week 1. Did you see any preseason stuff with the 49ers, and did he catch your eye at all?
Yeah, no, Richie James was definitely a guy that stood out. He was extremely quick, made a lot of plays. I think I remember seeing him drop a pass. Be a real playmaker, but the thing is, the Raiders and the Niners just have kind of a logjam at the slot receiver type of position. They have Trent Taylor, Pettis could play in the slot. So I could see where it could be a little tough to get him on the field. Maybe it's a possibility with Marquise Goodwin being injured. Maybe Pettis moves outside and they could have Richie James rotate in with Taylor. But I like what I've seen from Richie James a lot from the preseason.
I want to go to the defensive side of the ball here before I let you go, Ted. The 49ers pass rush, you wrote, was virtually non-existent outside of DeForest Buckner. And Buckner, I think, is one of those guys that's on the fast track to stardom. And I think maybe nationally people don't recognize how good DeForest Buckner is. I think locally people really know how good he is. And only putting up 3 sacks last year doesn't help put him on the radar, the all-pro radar. But I think he's going to start getting a lot of accolades, especially when he jumps onto the scene in week one this year and almost matches his output in sack totals from last year with 2.5 sacks against the Vikings. Outside of the stud that DeForest Buckner is, and especially here in week two without Reuben Foster, who's also, I think, headed towards stardom on the 49ers defense, is there anything you saw that the 49ers could work on and work with as far as the pass rush goes? Because the defensive line did their job against the run.
Yeah, they did a lot of good stuff in the preseason with their stunts, the way they were using their hands. I thought Solomon Thomas looked improved, so I was surprised that Solomon Thomas didn't play as much, and the reasoning behind why he didn't play that much didn't really make sense to me, but, you know, I'm not an NFL coach. I was surprised Thomas didn't play. I mean, the Vikings aren't known for their offensive line. If it's one weakness they have, it's their offensive line. So it is disappointing to see that the pass rush wasn't better against worst offensive lines in the league. I want to see more from Solomon Thomas. I mean, we're definitely going to see a bigger pass rush from DeForest Buckner, but they need Thomas to play well.
Absolutely. What about the defensive backfield? They missed some tackles early in that game. Are you confident in the group that the 49ers put together there? And how do you see that defense going forward just as a whole? Do you think they're ready for prime time?
Yeah, it was a tough match. I mean, the Vikings have one of the best receiving corps in the NFL with Adam Thielen and Stephon Diggs. And Richard Sherman still doesn't look 100% to me. I know he wasn't targeted much, but there's just a few plays where he just doesn't look like he has the change of direction ability that he used to have. So I think it's going to take a few weeks for him to really get back to where he needs to be. I think Tart, as a strong safety, is a very underrated player. I think he's a star that most people outside Niner fans don't really know about. He's extremely good against the run. I thought his pass coverage was very good. I know he had one touchdown caught on him, but that was just an absolute perfect pass by Kirk Cousins, and just no defense for a perfect pass. And I believe he missed a couple tackles too, but the whole Niners team missed a lot of tackles. They missed 14 tackles on a day, which is a little concerning, but this is kind of a common theme that we've seen ever since the new CBA rules with limited contact. A few teams will be really bad at tackling the first 2 weeks, and then they start getting better towards midseason. So this could be an issue that goes on for a couple weeks, and hopefully they get that corrected sooner than later.
Yeah, a crazy stat I saw from PFF about Dalvin Cook in that game, to put the missed tackles into perspective, is that Dalvin Cook had 40 yards rushing on the game, 45 yards after contact. He was hitting the backfield on 12 of 16 of his rushes.
Yeah, that's crazy. And that was a huge part of the game. I mean, they held the Vikings. They didn't let the Vikings score that many points, but I mean, imagine if they finished some of those tackles, you know, they might have won with just 18 points.
And I think that's where Reuben Foster is really going to come in, and especially in week three, once he's done with his suspension, and really clean up some of that stuff. Cause I think Brock Coyle was taken advantage of on the outside a little bit, and Dalvin Cook was able to get outside and in some pass routes, and Kirk Cousins even scrambling a little bit. And I think those kind of things will get shut down pretty quick once Reuben Foster shows up on the scene.
Yeah, that's going to be a really athletic linebacker deal with Fred Warner and Reuben Foster. I thought Warner played extremely well. And once you get those two guys in the middle, it's going to be really tough to outrun them. And they're going to be a very fun duo to watch for Niner fans for years, I think.
Yeah, and it's pretty clear that this scheme that Robert Saleh runs to, it's really reliant on having those athletes at those two inside linebacker positions. So, yeah, Foster next to Warner is going to be fun because the range that they have and allows the 49ers defense to really do what they want to do. Ted, I know you're a foodie. One real quick question before I let you go. I see some of the dishes you post on social media. We talked a little bit about food before we went on the air here, and we could do a whole podcast on just this, but what is your one deathbed Bay Area meal?
Oh, man. Okay. This is chicken and waffles from 900 Grayson. 900 Grayson is a restaurant in Berkeley. I actually met Tom from MySpace there, but they have, I think, the best. I've tried a lot of chicken and waffles, all over the country. And to me, this spot in Berkeley has the best chicken and waffles. They have a soft, thin waffle. They have boneless fried chicken on top, and they pour this delicious gravy they make with cayenne pepper, and they have a house-made hot sauce there. It's delicious. Every time I go there, I'm never disappointed.
Okay, that's a good one. Wait, what's it called again? Grayson 5050?
No, 900 Grayson.
Oh, 900 Grayson, I'm sorry. 900 Grayson, and you can also meet Tom from MySpace there, so that's an extra added bonus.
yeah, he was in everybody's top five, so it's good to meet him.
And what's your go-to game day snack?
Go-to game day snack? Just honestly, just a lot of coffee, so I can stay focused and alert.
Do you have a favorite coffee place in the Bay? There's so many good ones.
Yeah, Blue Bottle Coffee, I think, is my favorite. It's just, I've drank so much coffee that it kind of lost its effect on me. But every time I have Blue Bottle, it still gives me a really strong kick.
I'm down with the Blue Bottle. I think Blue Bottle for me is number three behind Phil's and Four Barrel.
Yeah, Phil's is really good too. And Four Barrel I haven't tried, but I got to write these down. You got some good recommendations.
Absolutely, yeah. When you go to Phil's too, I'll get the large, and it'll get you jacked. And I'm kind of the same way, where that coffee and caffeine doesn't have the same effect on me as it used to, but you get a large Phil's, they brew it strong, and it can get you going.
Okay. I'm going to do that right now, actually, because I have to work out. So
there you go.
What I call an Italian pre-workout, a little espresso.
Yes. I've heard about that technique. You go coffee, then you take a 20-minute nap, and then you snap out of it with the caffeine hitting, and you work out. Is that actually a real thing?
But you have to be disciplined though. You got to drink the coffee, and you got to nap right away. You can't like be on your phone and mess around. You got to nap right away, and once you're awake, you're just alert.
Dang, I mean, Ted's just on his game right now. Full time writer at the Athletic, writing about football, over caffeinated, and just living the life. Love it, Ted. Thanks so much for joining the show once again.
No problem. Thanks for having me on.
Thanks again to Ted Wynn for joining me on the show. And don't forget, you can get 40% off your subscription to The Athletic at theathletic.com/lockedon49ers. Get everything from my guest today, Ted Wynn, as well as Matt Barrows and David Lombardi covering the 49ers beat, and all the national writers, all the sports going on at The Athletic. 40% off your subscription at theathletic.com/lockedon49ers. All right, be back on Monday. A rapid react from everything that went down on Sunday's home opener, the 49ers hosting the Detroit Lions in week 2. Talk to you guys then right here on Locked On 49ers.